For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital, a podcast about video games and the stories they tell. I'm one of your hosts, Caitlin Bailey, and with me I have my co-host, Mark Bigney. Mark, how's it going?
Games, Caitlin, that's what's going on.
Very good. Today, we're going to be talking about the games that we've been playing lately, followed by our retro segment, Gaming Opinions on Old School Funware, where we're going to be talking about Soul Calibur 2. And then we're going to move on to our feature game, which this week is my favorite horse game ever, Red Dead Redemption 2, followed by where we shamelessly hype up upcoming titles. I didn't say that right for Shout, but it's called Shout.
Respect the acronym, Caitlin.
Yes.
It's part of our brand.
Definitely need to respect the acronym. So Mark, what are you playing lately?
So I've been returning to some older fighters. I talked last week about Dead or Alive 6. I stand behind everything I said about Dead or Alive. I've actually been consuming some think pieces on YouTube about why Dead or Alive is underappreciated. And if anything, it hasn't made me move off my fundamental take. It's made me a little less proud of the take, though, because a lot of people... So it's one thing to say Dead or Alive is a fabulous fighting game series. Shame about its representation of ninjas. A number of people are like, Dead or Alive is underappreciated and the way they represent ninjas is fine. And it's like, I'm not there where you are. Where you are sounds like a good place to be. That's fine. I'm only judging you a little bit, but I'm over here. And I haven't found a whole bunch of other people to share this space with me over here with respect to Dead or Alive. But anyway, I've been playing Samurai Showdown. I've been playing the new one that came out in 2019. I've also been playing Samurai Showdown 2 and Samurai Showdown 4. And I've been playing those on my Ambernic RG Arc, which was an emulation handheld released a couple of years ago that is really, really fabulous for fighting games. And it was held back by the fact that the custom firmware market kind of ignored it, and there wasn't really much support for it, and the stock firmware was garbage. But there was a release of Rocknix, which is an excellent custom firmware solution for the RG Arc a few months ago. And ever since then, I've been having a great, great time. And I've never really appreciated Samurai Showdown 4 before. It's really quite excellent. It had every character had two versions, both the Slash and the Bust version. And I never really explored that a whole heck of a lot. Like, the movesets change sometimes radically for a given character when you alter those things. And to a certain extent, that matters less in Samurai Showdown than other things, because what I adore about Samurai Showdown is that choosing a main character in a fighting game can be very fraught, but in Samurai Showdown, it's very simple as far as I'm concerned. What you do is you just look at their heavy slash, because their heavy slash is kind of their special move in Samurai Showdown, because normals do so much damage and commit you to so much and expose you to so much risk. And consequently, it is a joy to just discover normals again. And I've gotten against special moves, and special moves can be nice and flashy, but just the sheer joy of footsies is kind of distilled in Samurai Showdown in a lot of ways. And whereas before I'd mostly played Samurai Showdown 2 badly, I'd been held back by the fact that I didn't really have a solid main. And my favorite character is now firmly solidified as Kazama Sogetsu. Big fan of his. I really liked exploring his bust version in Samurai Showdown 4. Anyway, part of my enthusiasm for going back to the older Samurai Showdown games, independently of the fact that I love going and playing retro fighting games, is because a YouTuber named Matt McMuscles, who is from Montreal, respect, did a glorious 90-minute retrospective on the Samurai Shodown games. I'll put a link in the episode notes. And it really made me want to go back and explore some of the older ones. And also go back to the newest one. So the newest one was released in 2019, and it is simply called Samurai Shodown because irony is dead, and with it, reliable numbering patterns for long-running series.
Okay.
It is slightly more defensible in the context of Samurai Shodown because it had been over 15 years since the last release. Less defensible in cases like, I don't know, God of War. But anyway, it is an extremely faithful representation of what made Samurai Shodown great in the first place. Lots of gore, lots of sort of stylized representations of quote-unquote traditional Japanese culture that bears no resemblance to actual traditional Japanese culture. But it's got the visuals down, it's got the pacing down, which is what Samurai Shodown 5 kind of messed with. Samurai Shodown 5 was a little bit too fast-paced for the series, whereas Samurai Shodown has always been much slower, again, about landing that huge heavy slash, which might take off like a quarter of your opponent's life bar in a single attack. I'm not super into combos. It's just not a thing I like doing. I will play your anime fighters. I'll play your Blazes Blue. I will play your Guilty's Gear. I will do those things. I will mash them buttons. But, you know, ever since the Versus titles that Capcom had, I'm just not a big fan of that kind of spectacle in your Spectacle Fighter. I prefer, you know, your classic footsies. And that's where I feel most comfortable. I'm not good at it. I'm in no way competent in any of these fighting games. Look, a lot of people say, this is a very common thing to say on the internet, Caitlin, and I just want people to understand the context. A lot of people say, I love fighting games, I'm terrible at them. This is a common thing to say, and it is usually true, and I'm not going to accuse anyone of saying that in bad faith. Mm-hmm. But just understand that when I say it, I really mean it. I've been playing fighting games for over 30 years. I was last good at fighting games when I was 14.
Yeah.
I was pretty good when I was 14. When I was playing Street Fighter II Turbo, and Sagat was ridiculously overpowered, and I mained Sagat, I was vaguely competitive. Ever since then, it's been downhill.
Yeah, downhill from there.
Anyway, I've been having a great time with Samurai Shodown. I'm very pleased that it was so successful. Like, it's very gratifying as a longtime SNK fan that their properties are getting more and more exposure. You know, whether it's Terry Bogard in Street Fighter VI, whether it's the fact that Samurai Shodown made huge bank, whether it's the fact that Chun-Li and Ken are going to be in the next Garo game, which is really busting my head wide open. They announced the more and more characters for Garo City of the Wolves. I'm super hyped for that.
Nice.
In many ways, Samurai Shodown is the series from SNK that I played the least. I think I've even played more World Heroes than Samurai Shodown. That's saying something. I've played more The Last Blade than Samurai Shodown. But all of those are brilliant series, and I really respect that Samurai Shodown dares to be very different from a lot of other 2D fighters, even other 2D weapons-based fighters. Again, in the pacing, in its emphasis on normal attacks, in its approach towards risk and reward. And it's been great to just experience that paradigm shift and see how it's been instantiated in different releases. And so I highly recommend the newest one. It is available on every platform known to humanity in its contemporary version. Now, if you have serious misgivings about funneling money to the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, and Mohammed bin Salman in particular, I cannot begrudge you that unwillingness. It is an unfortunate circumstance, all told, so it is somewhat fraught. But Samurai Shodown is a great game, and it looks like it's got a great future. And I've been having a great time exploring its history and enjoying its present. Do you have any experience with Samurai Shodown, Caitlin?
I do not. I was actually wondering, so a little earlier you mentioned bust mode and something else mode. What does that mean?
So, in a variety of SNK fighters, so I'll talk about King of Fighters 98. It's probably one of the most famous ones. You could choose what to do with your gauges. There was two different gauge modes that you could do. This okay. experienced its height of absurdity in a Capcom offering, Capcom versus SNK 2, where every character had six different modes. But again, that was all about gauges. And sometimes it would be about, do you have a forward roll? Do you have a dodge? Do you have a short jump? Do you have a guard cancel, etc.? But the core movesets were the same for the characters in all of those cases. They were, again, just fiddling with the gauges and fiddling around with some other alternate forms of movement. But in some Samurai Shodown games, most notably 4, that's the best instantiation of it as far as I'm concerned, every character would have two different sets of special moves. the slash mode and the bust mode. And this was also, there were plot consequences for this as well. I don't know why it was called bust, by the way. The slash mode character was kind of sort of their default vaguely chivalrous version, and the bust mode was them being kind of mean and nasty.
Okay.
This was actually represented in later Samurai Shodown games as the bust version of the character being an entirely separate character.
Oh.
Usually in the sense of them being possessed or enraged or psychotic, whatever. But that's just an indication of how different the characters were. Now, in the case of Kazama Sogetsu, with whom I have the most experience, all the normals are the same. As a rule, the normals are the same. Mm-hmm. They don't change how the gauge works. They both work on the same fundamental rage gauge that the Samurai Shodown games have always had. But the special moves are visually evocative of each other. Like, so Kazama Sogetsu manipulates water. Like, that's his deal. He has water-based attacks. But in his slash mode, he has a variety of very tricky distance-specific attacks. It's one of those things where the jab goes a certain distance and then the strong goes a certain distance and heavy slash goes further. Mm-hmm. And if you misjudge the distance, it's just not going to do anything. In the context of his bust mode, he transforms into someone who has less variety in terms of his moves, but he just develops these wave projectiles that just cross the screen at a very, very fast clip.
Okay.
And as somebody who's used to having to judge the exact distance, it was extremely strange to suddenly just start blasting things from across the screen. Now, that's his only trick. He becomes very much a one-trick pony in comparison. Mm-hmm. On the ground, but he gains a whole bunch of aerial special moves. Like, he gets this weird aerial throw where he dives and tries to grab somebody by the head and then toss them a bunch. It's bizarre. So he becomes an entirely different character. And it's really interesting, given that the cast was already pretty big, that they basically doubled it with all these other modes.
Yeah.
And it is very common for SNK games to have you select at the beginning a variety of different modes. But again, usually it's not about the core movesets of the fighters, whereas Samurai Shodown has messed with that at various times.
Yeah, that sounds pretty neat.
I just don't understand how there are a whole bunch of people in the fighting game community that don't really know about SNK. That SNK is just this entirely alien universe to them. And I get it. A lot of them are younger, and they came of age before Street Fighter IV came along. And SNK was basically dead as disco at that point. And so if you're only doing the new titles, you might have never heard of King of Fighters before King of Fighters 14 got released. But as somebody who was an arcade rat in the 90s, and even then, there are some people who came of age at that time who just don't have any exposure to SNK properties. And to them, I sincerely feel a certain degree of pity. Like, you're missing out on a lot. There's some great, weird, like, even their lesser stuff, like World Heroes, not designed by SNK, but published on the Neo Geo, not a brilliant fighting series, but still pretty cool. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff there if you're inclined to go and explore the history. And by explore the history, I don't just mean playing Third Strike. Nothing against Third Strike. Okay, that's a lie. I've got a fair number of things against Third Strike. But the history of fighting games goes way, way past Third Strike in whichever version of Street Fighter 2 you want to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for whatever reason, so I had played Fatal Fury back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've played very many of the others. But I should...
Which Fatal Fury?
I think the first one.
Oh, wow. Okay. Before it really hit its stride. Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of Fatal Fury Special, which was basically Fatal Fury 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the Real Bout series for Fatal Fury is great. It looks fantastic. It's very interesting. It feels different from a lot of the other 2D fighters. It's got this plane system, and the plane system is relatively well done. A little gimmicky, I'll grant you that. But it's super well done. Look, I'm an unapologetic SNK fanboy. Like, there are people in the emulation community and ask, you know, what's your favorite system to emulate? And they're like, oh, gee, I don't know, Super Nintendo, probably, PlayStation. I'm like, Neo Geo. Top three systems in that order all the way.
Yeah.
So, Caitlin, what have you been up to?
So, this last week I've been playing a bunch of stuff, but I'm going to talk about two games. So, one is I've just been playing more Monster Hunter Wilds beta because I love it. One thing I just want to clear up from last week is one of the things that I complained about was that riding the Sekret mount is horrible because it just auto runs and it's awful. There's options to change that. And I finally investigated that this week because I was like, surely they're
they
not
can't
just
have intended
do
it to be this way.
Yeah. So there's other options where when you call it, it doesn't immediately start running away. You can actually control it manually. So
wait. So you call the mount, it shows up, and it just doesn't stop. It's like,
no.
Bye.
No, it You get on it, and then it starts, like, running toward whatever thing you have marked, which generally seems like it would be a good idea, but sometimes I call it, and I'm like, actually, you know, maybe I don't want to see this monster in exactly 80 seconds because I'm still waiting for my friends. I just wanted to be ready to go, and, you know, my bird is already halfway there. So, anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thankfully, you don't call it, and it just leaves. That would be something else.
I don't know. Overenthusiastic pets sounds like a pretty good video game feature.
Overly
very evocative and true to life, but
yes, that's true.
I can see why it would be a bit of a drag.
One of the things when I was playing Monster Hunter Wilds beta, they had one of the like more, I can't remember the name of the monster, but it was one of the special ones. So he's not on the map all the time. And he has like these big tendrils that he kind of like, so have you seen people like pictures of people working out where they're just like shaking ropes or something? And they're just like,
oh, yeah, all the time. CrossFit. Yeah. You shake the ropes.
Well, that monster does this, basically. And it hurts real bad. Okay. So that
the monster does CrossFit.
Yeah. Yeah. Monster does CrossFit.
I hate it already.
We never managed to kill it. You only get 15 minutes and we could not make it happen. But it was still really fun to fight.
Do you know why that monster won't go down?
Why?
Because it does CrossFit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it throw kettlebells at you?
I don't think so, although maybe that comes later. Anyway, so that was Monster Hunter Wilds. I don't have too much to add to last time. I just wanted to mention, you know, you can fix the bird mount being terrible.
Has the beta evolved, or is it just the same set of features that it was when you started?
The only thing I noticed that was different from the last time was this different monster, and I think it's very possible that monster was available previously, just wasn't on the map when I played. But yeah, so the other game that I played in this last week is The Root Trees Are Dead. Full disclosure, I know the developer that worked on the Steam version of this. The Root Trees Are Dead is, it's funny because it's definitely a puzzle game, or at least a type of puzzle game. I generally don't like puzzles, but this is a type of puzzle that works for me. The whole gist of the game is that in The Root Trees Are Dead, at the very beginning, a plane crashes and it takes out the president of the Root Tree Candy Company, as well as his wife and three daughters.
Feel good story of the year.
Yes, feel good story of the year. And there's this weird thing with the Root Tree Company where like all of the assets end up having to get distributed among blood relatives only. So if you married in, you don't get anything. So you have to figure out who is a Root Tree relative. And that's kind of just the gist of the game. You get started with a few, you know, a few names and a computer, and you're hooked up to the internet and you get to, you know, search. But this also takes place in 1998. So we don't have Google here. We have something called Spider Search, and we have some periodical lookups. And it's a really neat little game. I was surprisingly into it. I had, you know, I got that little hit of dopamine every time I locked in a new person, and I went to bed far too late the first night I started playing.
So can you speculate as to why this kind of puzzle satisfies you and others don't?
I think because it felt that like it was deduction, and that was fun. Like I enjoy deduction puzzles versus literally every other puzzle.
Well, let's be frank, most video game puzzles, even ones in very compelling games, tend to be very artificial and extremely contrived.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even in the context, I can't believe I'm about to do this. I'm so sorry. I really shouldn't do this. Okay, I won't talk about Inscription. Let's talk about a different game called Outscription, okay? In Outscription, even though it's presented as some sort of organic environment, what you still wander over to a cabinet with a freaking combination puzzle with like sliding tiles and stuff, mm-hmm. right? So even when it's in context and it's in a plausible world and they're trying to really set a scene, it's so often, oh, we made this security system based on having to slide these tiles around. I'm like, yeah, gee, okay.
Yeah.
It always seems inorganic and artificial and weird, and it really seems like there's like the same six set of puzzles that are just recycled ad infinitum, and I hate all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, based on your description of how it works, like, this is a pretty plausible setup, and if they execute this kind of puzzle solving and deduction in an organic way. That sounds vastly more satisfying than that. And to boot, a manner of deduction not reminiscent of studying for the LSATs. It's like, yes. John, Mary, and Sue are each wearing a sweater. The available color sweaters are as follows. Where are they sitting and what color sweater are they? And it's Tuesday and it's raining. It's like, oh, kill me now.
Yeah. So none of that. None of those stupid light puzzles where you turn a node on or off and all the neighboring ones will flip. You know, none of that. Just deduction based on reading articles and books and, you know, getting some physical items. Like, you'll get a brochure that has this preacher is having this weekend God celebration thing. And, you know, there's these other people there and you can look them up and find out who they are and figure out if they're related to the other people. And anyway, yeah, The Root Trees Are Dead was very, very compelling for me. Out of, like, the story was interesting and I loved doing the deduction. Although, not that good at it. Got stuck a lot. But the help system that is within the game is brilliant. Like,
oh, cool.
There's a little rubber ducky, and you click on it, and the rubber ducky will give you a little hint. And if you're still lost, you can click again. It'll give you another hint until it eventually is just like, hey, this is exactly where you need to look. You idiot.
Stop clicking me. Here's the answer. Let's move on.
Yeah. So I really liked it because it gives you all the information. It's not always obvious how to find it, but you won't get stuck forever. You're not forced to go talk to the search engine to figure out, or like the real search engine in the real world, to figure out how to do something. You can figure out everything by talking to the rubber ducky. So, big fan.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, apparently it's available for free, or the first version of The Root Trees Are Dead is available for free on itch.io. It had all AI art, hence available for free. But The Root Trees Are Dead Steam version that just released, they, you know, hired artists and everything looks really nice.
Good stuff. Just out of curiosity, one final question. How much does it depend on an enthusiasm for genealogy?
I don't have an enthusiasm for genealogy, so not at all, I think.
I ask because as somebody with a somewhat unusual last name, every once in a while, and this was true until I basically withdrew entirely from social media, other than under my podcast guises, I would get these people, they're like, hey, I'm researching the people with this last name from this region. Could you tell me where your grandparents were born and what you know about your great-grandparents? And I would reply politely and say, I don't know. And, you know, best of luck. And they would usually reply with some degree of incredulity that I was so indifferent. It's like, don't you want to know? I'm like, no, actually.
I'm good, turns out.
I am spectacularly bored by genealogy. I have no resentment or disinclination towards people that are interested in genealogy.
Yeah.
I just could not care less in my own particular case. And the number of people who just... I'm always amazed when people who... by people who don't understand people who don't share their interests. I mean, I guess as somebody who just talked, who just expressed similar amazement that people don't like SNK fighting games, I guess I'm a raging hypocrite. But I did at least in my defense couch that as like people who are interested in fighting games. Mm-hmm. But there are these people who like genealogy. It's like, how could you not like genealogy? There are these people who like folk dancing. It's like, how could you not like folk dancing? There's people who like crochet. They're like, how could you not like crochet? It's like, the world is a big, vast, and beautiful place. And there are lots of interest. And when someone says, I hate video games, my response is not incredulity or disgust. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Good to know. I no longer have anything I can speak with you about, but I'm glad to know. That's not entirely accurate for me, but it's maybe a little bit, maybe a little.
I have a number of interests. I'm just expressing the idea that...
Hey, I was speaking for myself, Mark. As soon as somebody says that they don't like video games, I'm like, oh, that's like 80% of the possible conversation topics that I might have had.
Fair enough. So thanks very much for telling me about The Root Trees Are Dead. I was somewhat curious. And as somebody who generally doesn't like puzzle games, this sounds like the puzzle game, possibly for people who don't like puzzle games. And so I think I'll take a look at the one on itch.io. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So we're going to move on now to our retro segment, Gaming Opinions on Old School Funware, a.k.a. Goof. Goof has been described as a tale of soul and swords, eternally retold. Not really. But today we're going to be talking about Soul Calibur 2. Now, One of the things that I just didn't know about Caitlin, and she's talked about this a number of times on the podcast, was that she used to have a history in fighting games far deeper than I thought, because I knew a certain amount about Caitlin's interest in video games, and I didn't know that it extended to fighting games at all. And so that she had a bit of a past in it struck me as great. And so I said, Caitlin, why don't you suggest some of the games that characterized your time back in Massachusetts playing fighting games? And she came up with two suggestions. One of them was Soul Calibur 2, which is what we'll be talking about today. And one of them, which I think is an indication about how long it's been since she's been seriously into fighting games, said Street Fighter 2. And I'm like, I assume you don't mean the World Warrior. Which version? And she's like, versions?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely played. I played the original Street Fighter, although not very much. And then I played 2 and Turbo, and probably also Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. But I don't, if I'm being honest, I can't remember if I ever played Street Fighter 3.
That's fair. A lot of people skipped 3.
Okay.
So Soul Calibur 2, I remembered immediately one of the things about it, which was borderline controversial at the time, was that different home ports had different rosters in them. So there was the GameCube version, which had Link as a guest fighter.
Yes.
Or as he's affectionately known on this podcast, Green Hat Generic Adventure Boy. The PS2 version had Heihachi Mishima from the Tekken series. This is on top of the fact that Yoshimitsu was part of the core cast across all versions. And then there was the Xbox version. And do you remember who the guest fighter was for the Xbox version,
Caitlin? I can't remember. Who is it?
It was Spawn.
Spawn?
Yes. So Soul Calibur 2 was released in 2002. Spawn was already way over. Like, he had a moment in sometime in the 90s when people could take him, I'm not going to say seriously, but as a cultural object, at least. 2002 was definitely way after Spawn had any credibility. This is because Todd McFarlane, Mr. Spawn, did the character design of Necrid, who's in the core cast. And so in the Xbox version, there's Spawn. Because, sure.
That's so silly. Okay.
I know. As opposed to the very serious business of fighting games, of course.
Yes, yes, of course.
So, Caitlin, tell us all about Soul Calibur 2.
Okay, so Soul Calibur 2. I guess before we get started, just as a preface, one of my weirdly strongest memories about Soul Calibur 2 and how you spell the word caliber is that I made flyers for video game club doing a Soul Calibur 2 tournament, and some smartass crossed out the U in Calibur and wrote an E, and it's like, no, idiot. I know how to spell it. Like,
and this memory is clearly what drove you to start a podcast, because being corrected falsely by strangers online is just a great feeling.
Yes.
Yes, although in the context of Canadian, people who are very hung up on Canadian or British spellings, they would have crossed out the U and written in the E after the R.
Yes, of course. Oh, God. Okay, anyway, so Soul Calibur 2. I, of course, played that a little bit this week. I was a bit disappointed. I couldn't find my old GameCube memory card. I'm not sure which box it's in at this point. I did still have the memory card that I used for Beyond Good and Evil. So I started a fresh game. So, of course, starting a fresh game, I didn't have my favorite character. I didn't have Sophidia. But that's okay. I had Sophidia's sister, Cassandra, who's extremely similar. So played through, like, arcade on Cassandra. She's so... So, okay, I forgot to check if I could have switched to Japanese voices, but the voice acting is a thing. And
it's real bad.
It's, yeah. Cassandra, just after a fight, being like, I don't understand anything at all. And it's like, oh, okay. My daughter is sitting behind me while I'm playing, and Cassandra says that, and she's like, what? Like, did she just say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's embarrassing.
You can switch to the Japanese voices, and it is much better.
Okay. I should have done that.
That sonorous announcer guy who always speaks English, I got real tired of him. I remembered him being a little bit insufferable. I'm not going to say he was Navi level, but just that him yammering on about Destiny and Tails and Swords and things like that. I found that especially obnoxious because I was maining Killick. And it's like, dude, I've got a staff. Shut up about Swords.
Yeah.
Very petty, extremely petty, nonetheless, this was one of my reactions.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had spent hours and hours, and I mean, we're going beyond hours, almost weekly at Video Game Club. You know, we would get together, we would play Soul Calibur 2. My husband would play Voldo, not Volvo. I've made the mistake of calling him Volvo multiple times, but he is not a car. He is a dude with claw hands.
I can't believe that anyone mains him. I thought that I didn't know that anyone did.
I know. I hated him. I still hate him. Like, he actually, I don't know where it is, but he has a little action figure of him, too, somewhere around here. And
that's gross. Yep. I think that if you get a Voldo action figure, you get on a watch list somewhere.
I had a little bit of a hard time, like, kind of getting back into the swing of things because I half remember some of the combos, and half remembering is not very effective. But I was able to, like, I got through Arcade, which granted, I don't think it's particularly difficult, no. But I got through it with only a handful of deaths and, you know, slowly started picking up all of my old Cassandra moves. And I had a good time. That was Killick.
So I don't actually like Killick all that much. One of the reasons why the Soul Calibur series is awkward for me is because Soul Edge, or Soul Blade, the very first game, I got a very strong attachment to the moveset of Siegfried, and I was rewarded for this attachment by him disappearing from the series for several entries and not coming back, because Nightmare, number one, is gross, and number two doesn't have the same moves, and I didn't like his different moveset. So that was a bit of a thing. Such is the way of fighting games. You know, you pick a main, and sometimes that main just doesn't show up again, which is one of the main reasons why I feel so safe with Terry Bogard in his big muscular arms. And he smells like home, and I just know that he's going to be in every single King of Fighters game, and I don't have to worry about it. And I fall asleep on his shoulder. Anyway, it's a whole thing.
You can be safe with Terry.
Soul Calibur is weird. So on the one hand, as a series, it's almost always been characterized by a truly Herculean quantity of single-player content. And that's great. You know, the Weapon Master mode is what they call it in Soul Calibur 2. You can unlock a whole bunch of different weapons for your characters. And that, it doesn't change how they play substantially, but it changes a little bit and it changes it graphically. And Soul Calibur has always been a very, very accessible system. And I like accessibility in fighting games. It's very approachable. It's got a very good parry system in Soul Calibur 2. I think the Soul Calibur 2 is the first time they made the parry system really easy to execute, but not trivial.
Yeah.
And despite all this, I don't really like Soul Calibur. It's part of it is, I think, that I'm not really comfortable with any of the characters. None of them really speak to me. Part of it also is I think the moveset is fundamentally kind of parsimonious. Like, I'm not saying it's a button masher. It's not. Like, that's just not true. But I end up playing it as a button masher. Right? And so whatever it is about the systems of Soul Calibur that aren't clicking with me, make me play it as a dumber game than it is. And so consequently, I don't tend to enjoy it very much. But I respect the fact that a lot of people really, really enjoy it, in part because of how good the single-player content is, and in part because of how accessible the fundamental systems are. And that's really cool. Like, I really like Virtua Fighter. I maintain that it's more accessible than people give it credit for, but it is not a very accessible game. And at least in Soul Calibur, you know, you can mash some buttons and get somewhere.
Yeah, you definitely can. I mean, that was basically what I did for almost every arcade battle. I tried to get my daughter to play it with me, but she decided she wanted to be on her phone instead. So, you know.
Did you just tell her that it was Roblox?
I should have told her it was Roblox. I was like, this is Roblox. It's just on.
Yeah, there's this new Roblox mod. It's called Soul Calibur 2. Ignore where it says 2002.
Oh, God. Yesterday she was talking to me. She was asking me, she wants to play this game called Alice, like the American McGee Alice or whatever, the old one. Scary, I don't know. It's like a...
American McGee? Yeah.
Yeah, so she was talking about how she wanted to play that, and I was like, well, you know, just to warn you, it's like really old. And she was like, oh, will it have similar graphics to the game block? The game box? I was like, oh, God. It's like, it's a GameCube. It's a GameCube.
10 out of 10, no notes.
She trolls me so effortlessly. I mean, that wasn't even trolling. That was just her being, you know, a child that wasn't alive in the 2004 or whatever.
Let's be real here. The fact that she got that close is a minor miracle.
You're right. You're right.
For an antiquated piece of technology that, let's be frank, lost its generation hard.
Yeah.
You must be doing something right.
Doing my best.
Yeah, ultimately, it's weird. I played a lot of Soul Blade, which was the first one that was adapted to the PS1. And ever since then, like, people rave about the first Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. And I love fighters on the Dreamcast. It's just never really done much for me. I don't know what it is. Like I say, there's something about the game that makes me bounce off it. Part of it is the cast. Part of it is the silly announcer. I also get really bored with all the effects, like those big swoopy
mm-hmm.
graphical effects for all the weapons. It just doesn't do it for me. And then Ivy shows up and I get all embarrassed by how stupid everything is.
Yeah, Ivy's a lot. I think the first time that I came across Soul Calibur was inside like a EB Games electronics boutique, and they had like a Dreamcast set up with Soul Calibur, and I decided to play Sophidia, and I forget who I was fighting against, but the thing that sold me on it, which is such a gimmick, but whatever, is somebody fell through like a glass floor or something, and they went down to the next level. I don't know. It was very cool, and I was just like, I wanna go to there.
Well, the rings and the environments are pretty good. I forgot how few there were.
Yeah.
In Soul Calibur 2. They tend to recycle them a bunch. But that was one of the reasons why, actually, going back to Dead or Alive, why Dead or Alive is so awesome. The environments in Dead or Alive, particularly Dead or Alive 5, were just spectacular, and they just kept changing and evolving, and you punch someone through a plate glass, and suddenly you're outside, and they fall a weird way, and then suddenly you're in the middle of traffic and someone gets run over. Competitively balanced? Not at all.
No.
Big on spectacle? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be. Not everything needs to be competitively balanced, as long as it's fun to play. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things, you know, going back to what I said before, that's one of the consensuses around Dead or Alive 6. They tried to make it an esport. And in the process of trying to make it amenable to that kind of environment, they lost what made the series successful. Part of that was animation and ninjas, but setting all that aside, it's like, I don't have any interest in esports. I like fighting games, but I don't like esports. So stop trying to make games that are esports, and then if they don't immediately get latched onto by the community, dumping it a month later and moving on, mentioning no major releases in particular.
Yeah, no major releases in particular. Yeah, I wish that the focus would just be on, can we make a fighting game that is very fun to play and that lots of people will enjoy playing? I mean, that's really what you need, I feel like. Like, of course, yes, there's esports stuff, but I don't know. I think the only thing that matters is if it's fun. But I don't care to watch fighting game esports, so maybe that's part of it. I mean, when I learned that people play Super Smash Brothers with, like, no platforms, no items, just fighting, it's like, okay, that's fine, I guess, but you just deleted, like, 85% of the game.
Yeah. I will say, though, despite the fact that there hasn't been a Soul Calibur release in forever, and there's not likely to be one anytime soon, like, they've been very, very clear at Namco that there's very limited bandwidth for demand for fighting games, and Tekken, as far as they're concerned, is it.
Yeah.
You know, that exhausts the entirety of their momentum. That having been said, fighting game fans are in a pretty good place. Like, yeah, Dead or Alive is probably dead. Soul Calibur is definitely dead for now. But Garo is coming back. King of Fighters is going strong. Street Fighter is going strong. This is a good place to be. So thank you for giving us an opportunity to go back to Soul Calibur, reminding me of, you know, why it was the series I didn't really like.
Glad to be of service.
No, that's fine. It was one of the things that prompted me to go to Samurai Showdown, because that's the weapon-based fighter that I actually really enjoy. So
yeah,
there you have it. And so now we move on to our feature game, which is Red Dead Redemption 2, released by Rockstar Games in 2018. Everyone in the world loves it. It is the greatest thing ever, and I think we're done, right?
Yeah, yep, I think that's it. We can move on to shamelessly hyping. Wait, we need to take a break.
We'll take a break to hear from our sponsors.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. So, Caitlin, what I'm very curious about this. I have many questions for you about Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
But I would like to start at the very beginning, and that is, what is your experience with Rockstar Games?
Okay. So, I mean, I've played Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Redemption 2, and End of List.
You have never engaged in Grand Theft Auto?
Okay.
Not even a bit?
So, I have a little bit. I think I picked up Grand Theft Auto 3 or something. I never played seriously, though. I just, you know, would wreak havoc around the city and see how many stars I could rack up, and then I'd get bored and turn it off. I have heard from multiples of them, especially Vice City, I think. I've heard very good things about, you know, how fun of a game it is and stuff, but it just didn't appeal to me the way that cowboys did. And mostly, you know, pretty ponies.
Okay. And it's primarily the ponies. You don't really, like, you're not a Sergio Leone fan.
No.
You don't watch a whole bunch of Westerns. And okay. Yeah, I didn't really have a whole lot of experience with Rockstar either. I played the first Red Dead Redemption, parts of it. I don't really remember too much of it. I remember being appalled when you discover that the protagonist's wife and family aren't, like, on the other side of the moon, but just, like, the county over.
Yeah.
I for some reason, I found that deeply shocking. Like, it shocked me to my core, and it made me unable to finish the game.
Oh, no.
I don't even know why.
Yeah.
I couldn't even comment. But before that, like many gamers of my generation, I was exposed to the cultural juggernaut that was, and frankly still is, Grand Theft Auto. And I have never enjoyed Grand Theft Auto games. Mm-hmm. I've admired the craft. Like, when I discovered that there were all these radio stations that they had bothered to record DJs and talk radio,
mm-hmm.
and get licensed music and commission their own music. It's like, wow, the level of detail, the level of craft, the level of thought is spectacular. And I don't enjoy any of the things that go on in the game. You know, the driving isn't very well done. The combat isn't very well done. I can't really track what's going on once havoc starts. And so I never mm-hmm. really enjoyed causing havoc. So, like, I'd accidentally mow down a pedestrian in a car. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, reload a save, because I couldn't be bothered to go deal with the fallout.
Yeah.
And generally, I found the tone distasteful. And I'll admit, like, sometimes when, like, you've been talking about ninjas in Dead or Alive, I will insist that I'm not being prudish. In Grand Theft Auto, I am literally being prudish. I just don't enjoy the seedy criminality of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've done terrible, terrible things in lots of video games. But Grand Theft Auto rubbed me the wrong way, and I didn't want to participate in those stories. I just wasn't a story I wanted to tell, wasn't a story I wanted to be involved with, right?
Yeah, that's
so I have bounced off of all the Grand Theft Auto games.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've tried all of them, except for 5.
Okay.
5 is the one that I... By that point, it's like, okay, I know very firmly that Grand Theft Auto ain't for me.
You probably don't need to try a 5th time, yeah.
Yeah, pretty solid. And I'm not blind to the appeal of Westerns. Like, I like a fair number of revisionist Westerns. Frankly,
mm-hmm.
and there's some elements of the Western aesthetic that I find vaguely appealing. Like, it's complicated for a Canadian, right? We don't have the same shared mythos as a lot of American culture does.
Yeah.
But there is one board game, an old board game by Richard Hamblin called Gunslinger, which is truly absurd. Every turn of the game represents 2 seconds, and each turn is subdivided into 5 segments. So every action you do is 2/5 of a second, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And gunfights are fast and brutal, and it has an encyclopedic attitude towards the modeling of firearms. And I will admit, I have a fair degree of aesthetic appreciation for firearms. Mm-hmm. I don't have any interest in owning one, but I find them aesthetically interesting. So that's the backdrop for Red Dead Redemption 2.
Okay.
Tell us about Red Dead Redemption 2, Caitlin.
So, okay, if we want to do more of a, like, plot intro thing, that I can't do because it's been so long. When I played today, I loaded up an old save, so I missed completely the beginning of the game. So I'll leave you to speak to the plot elements if we want to give a little gist there. But at least for me, Red Dead Redemption is about finding the prettiest pony and then bring it around. And every now and then you do crime, but, you know, it's just it's just because Dutch needs money.
Sure. Dutch, he needs money. So Dutch is the leader of your gang, and the game begins kind of in medias res. You're on the run. Something went bad in Blackwater. Various allusions are made to various things that happened. And you basically just spend the game rebuilding this tattered group of outlaws. We're not even sure what their glory days looked like. Maybe there never were any glory days. I mean, we were talking about thieves, murderers, and liars. But you play as Arthur Morgan, who has various levels of being scruffy.
Yes.
Almost everything in Red Dead Redemption 2 can be customized. That includes your levels of scruffiness. There's a sliding scale of scruffiness. You can pomade your hair. You can cut your hair. There's 50 million different kinds of hats you can buy. Like, everything, just every detail can be customized to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And again, this is the level of craft that I associate with Rockstar Games. And that can mean that somebody like Caitlin can go and just spend their entire time customizing and playing around with ponies. And is that, am I right in thinking that that's the general paradigm under which you appreciate Red Dead Redemption 2?
Yeah, I mean, so I played through the whole story. I did most of the side quests. I don't think I 100%ed the game or anything. And I had a good time with all of it. But my favorite part by far was, you know, finding some of the fancier or more rare horses, you know, taming them, bringing them back to the stable, and making them mine.
Telling them they're a good boy or girl, yes. Feeding them sugar cubes, brushing their hair, customizing their manes.
Yep.
Tooling out the saddles.
Yeah. Like you were saying, with the customization of Arthur, you can do all of that with your horses, too. You can pick their, you know, their mane and tail color. You can pick the style for it. You can customize their tack and the bedroll that's on their saddle and, like, all sorts of stuff. Like, it's wild.
I hate it, Caitlin. Okay, I'm not quite at full Undertale.
Sure.
On a scale of, I understand why people like it and it's not for me to Undertale, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I will say this, I hate it, but I can't stop playing. I've played a lot of it for a game that I hate.
Okay. What? Why? How is this happening?
Okay, let me explain as to why I keep coming back to it. I can't tell you. I can tell you I can speculate.
Okay.
But let me tell you, I think a fair number of my criticisms, I think, can be encapsulated by the first bounty that I went and picked up.
Okay.
So you go and you pick up a bounty. There's a bounty poster. It's a beautifully rendered wanted poster. You can watch Arthur Morgan's stained fingernails as he, like, peruses the bounty poster and flips it over and then stuffs it in his little sack that mysteriously holds, like, 3 bison, an elk, and 50,000 shells of ammunition. And then you go off, and I'm told that this is a snake oil salesman who, unlike the snake oil that you actually consume that is good for you in the game, sells snake oil that is bad for people. Okay, fine, whatever, cool. There's a bounty involved. This seems like more honest work than many of the other things that you can do in Red Dead Redemption. And at the time, the bounty was, to my mind, an astronomical $50, and I needed a new hat desperately because everything looked janky. So, I find where the guy is. He's at a campfire. I'm like, okay, I sneak up. Problem the first. How do you sneak in Red Dead Redemption? Oh, yeah, you click the left stick, which is L3, but for whatever reason, every time it's tutorialized in Red Dead Redemption, it's presented as LS, which is just left stick, but left stick is, does that mean click it in or move around? Okay, I vaguely remember that means click in. Okay, so here I am sneaking up. Because they had already tutorialized me painfully, how to use a lasso. I'm like, okay, I'm going to lasso this dude. I'm going to hog tie him. I'm going to put him on my pretty pony, and I'm going to bring him back. Oh, but the game didn't want me to do that, Caitlin. The moment I got within a certain sneaking distance, Arthur Morgan stood up and just announced his presence to the guy because Rockstar wanted me to see the cutscene they'd prepared. See, here's the thing, and this is emblematic of what's going on, because Rockstar Games, in theory, have this huge tapestry upon which you can paint whatever you want, and that's kind of the promise that the games deliver. This is a lie. This is a veneer. Rockstar has given you a vague tapestry in which Rockstar is going to be painting, not you. Because the level of control you have is illusory. The sandbox is a lie. And this is true of all video games, right? If I'm playing Samurai Showdown, I'm not a samurai. I can't wield a sword. I can do specific predetermined attacks.
Sure.
Everything is curated. Fine. But Samurai Showdown isn't trying to present to me that I can do whatever I want to do. And then, after we had a little contretemps, my Arthur Morgan character and the snake oil salesman, I then had to go in a complicated chase sequence through a river and through some brush and then hog tie him anyway.
Yep.
I'm like, dude, I was ready to hog tie him and then you told me I couldn't. And on top of that, everything related to motion in Red Dead Redemption 2 is some of the worst controls I've ever seen in video games. I already complained about how you sneak, but I'm sick to death of mashing the A button every time I want to go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there are cores and there are meters. I don't fully understand the relationship between the two. Your meter can be full, but your core can be empty, or vice versa. All right, fine. I'd like a little bit more guidance, but there's no codex anywhere. So unless I want to compare like what the difference between a skunk and a muskrat is, that there's a codex entry for that. Yes. That's fine. There are examples of this abound. Another example, I was told that my horse was dirty, and that was going to lead the health core of my horse to degrade faster. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll clean my horse. That sounds great. So the moment it told me that my horse was dirty, I got the little tutorial pop up. I get off my horse. I engage left trigger, which is how you focus on things. Parenthetically, you better not be carrying a weapon, because if you try to talk to somebody and you forgot to stow your weapon, you're a wanted man now. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddies. Anyway, I focus on it, and one of the entries is clean horse. But it's grayed out. Why is it grayed out? Because the story cutscene that gives me the horse brush was three missions from then. But I didn't know that. But the tutorial had already told me, you better unclean your horse, idiot.
Yeah.
And it's in there in the menu, in the context-appropriate menu. And thank goodness there is a context-appropriate menu for that. Because taking cover is right button. No other game has done this in the history of ever. Taking cover being right button. Okay, fine, whatever. Sometimes LT is to aim, but sometimes during story cutscenes, the high consequence, high stakes cutscenes, RT is to aim, and then you release it, but you're still aiming, and then you hit RT again to shoot. I'm like, what the hell is this? Not the control scheme is honestly one of the worst I've ever played in any video game of its scope. If this were an indie game, I would complain about it and say that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But this is the biggest budget thing for forever. They made highly competent, highly trained, very successful programmers work 100-hour weeks for months to make this thing. And the control scheme is garbage. It's so bad. And it's bad in every mechanism. It's bad when you're hunting. It's bad when you're sneaking. It's bad when you're using items. It's bad when you're re-equipping. It's bad when you're buying things. It's bad when you're playing with your horsey. It's bad when you're riding your horsey. It's bad when you're selling your horsey. All of it is... It's a miracle how bad all of it is.
Okay. So why are you still playing?
I was ready to give up after about an hour of trudging through the snow. And part of it, I will confess, part of it suffers in comparison to, of all things, Hellblade 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a beautiful looking game. Red Dead Redemption 2 is lovely. It doesn't look as good as Hellblade 2.
Sure. Yeah.
And so just the vistas, they have all these cinematic camera angles to show you these sweeping vistas of mountains and snow and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I've seen better. So that was part of the problem. And the main character and all his friends express a strong disdain for civilization.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, we're not. I knew I was not simpatico with these people already. That's fine. But what made me start to appreciate Red Dead Redemption 2 was when you finally, about an hour or two into the game, go into your first settlement and you start interacting with a catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is really well done. It's just, the control scheme was still garbage.
Yeah.
It was still telling me to use buttons in an odd way and just not very intuitive. But the way you buy things in Red Dead Redemption 2 is you go to a shopkeeper, and the shopkeeper, their entire job in life is to just stand around and make small talk with you, because really what they tell you is, like, everything's in the catalog. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You have this lavishly animated over-the-shoulder camera view of Arthur Morgan approaching the catalog, opening up the catalog, and it's just this old-timey text with all the ad copy surrounding the thing that you're buying, whether it's suspenders, whether it's snake oil, or whether it's a revolver. And you just you literally just page through this catalog, and it's like, this is so well done and so lavishly detailed
mm-hmm.
that I really appreciated it. So wandering around town made me appreciate the level of detail and the level of effort, especially when I wasn't having to consciously try to do anything.
Yeah, that's understandable.
The problem is there's a bit of a low horizon for that, right? Like, you enjoy riding around on horses and getting new horses. I yes. enjoyed just watching them render civilization.
Yeah.
But the main character isn't interested in interacting with civilization, and most of the members of civilization don't appreciate the fact that Arthur Morgan is a con man, a grifter, and a thug. And so most of the opportunities are for you to run afoul of the law until you bizarrely chase down a witness and yell at them. Like, that makes no sense. It's absurd. Like, first of all, you're not going to have to worry about many criminal repercussions if you wear this tiny, dirty bandana over your lower mouth. Whatever. Fine. But then if somebody sees you do something, you then just run after them and just yell at them for a bit, and then they don't turn you in? It's bizarre.
Is that the case for everybody? Because I thought, again, this is not a piece of the game that I played, or of Red Dead Redemption 2 that I played, you know, this last week. I wasn't committing crimes. I was just riding around. I did a couple of little quests. But anyway, I thought sometimes they're like, no, I'm gonna do it. I'm going to call them anyway, or, you know.
Yeah, okay. Sure. The fact that it ever works, though, sure. I find very strange.
Yeah, it's on the honor system.
And the relentless, petty griminess I thought was going to subside. I thought part of this was some of the framing. Part of this was also just, frankly, the title of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was going to be a story of a guy getting a little bit older, having had a couple of setbacks, and realizing that, hey, maybe it's not a great idea to have a cult-like devotion to some fancy dude named Dutch who goes and tells me to murder people. Maybe I can make money being a bounty hunter. I can make money selling horses. I can make money as a hunter and trapper. I don't have to do this. This I really hoped was going to be after he beat the crap out of some poor Silesian immigrant and then rifled through his cabinets to find something he could pawn off because he was working for a loan shark. I'm like, this is gross. I don't want to do this. I don't want to pretend to do this in a video game. This makes me feel deeply uncomfortable. This is not the kind of story I want to be participating in. And I'm like, okay, but maybe they're setting something up. I don't think they are. Am I wrong? Please spoil me, Caitlin.
Okay, so it's not like this the whole time. You start at the beginning, you're doing crime. Eventually, you're starting to see kind of the, like, that Dutch isn't in there for all of you. He's in it for him, for himself. Some of the other members of your band are also, like, just deeply terrible people. Like, it fractures. It definitely fractures. And I feel like Arthur, I'm not going to say exactly what happened, but I cried at the end.
That gives me some hope. I mean, like, look, I'm not, again, like, I'm not blind to the appeal of playing dress up with Arthur, customizing his guns. I find the animations of him skinning animals and picking plants legit hilarious. Like, it's really cool. The way Arthur, no, I mean, like, yeah. this isn't even a criticism. I legitimately find this funny, and I kind of appreciate it. The way he picks flowers is, he picks up the stem of flowers, strips the stem of flowers, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, he rakes his hand across, the petals go flying, and you've been told that you've picked up a whole bunch of flower petals. I'm like, this is awesome. And, like, the way he skins a rabbit is similarly perfunctory. He picks up a rabbit and he just, like, he's a magician doing a prestige. He's like, and then you have a rabbit skin. It's great.
Yeah.
I love it. I laugh every time.
All of the animal skinning stuff is what made my husband be like, I don't know why you play this game. This is horrifying. Like,
so, yeah, the level of detail is admirable and the level of effort is transparent. I just, as somebody who really enjoys third-person shooters, I wasn't expecting the quality of the shooting game part to be very good. Because, again, I played Rockstar games before.
Yeah.
And the shooting in Grand Theft Auto is bad, I think. It's definitely not to my taste. And sure enough, it's pretty bad in the context of Red Dead Redemption 2. Fights are very, very perfunctory, bloody, and chaotic. But whatever. It's the Wild West. Sure, fine. Okay. Verisimilitude. And, you know, you just take cover and try to figure out what's going on, and you never really do, and it's all a little bit chaotic. All right, I can live with that. Getting from point A to point B, I do not find pleasant. Again, I'm either hammering the A button, and then the game tells me that I'm being too mean to my horse, or it just takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I get ambushed by people, and they murder me because there's no cover available, and there's six of them, and I'm just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like, frankly, I'm better able to articulate the things that I hate about Red Dead Redemption 2, and there are many of them. It does have some weird, compelling quality that makes me keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little more hard-pressed to identify what that is, other than the tremendous depth of detail.
Okay.
And the level of quality in the representation of the world. I just don't really like anything that I'm doing. I like a lot of things around it, a lot of the atmospherics, but all the things that I'm told to do, it's like, it's clumsy in terms of gameplay, and makes me feel grimy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the quests, especially in the first part of the game, they're not feel-good quests. And I know that you're not necessarily saying that they have to be, but, like, yeah, you just feel like a criminal, which is what he is, and it doesn't feel good to play through them. But I think that as the game goes on, eventually some of that changes. Arthur, I can't always defend all of Arthur's choices.
No, and I don't expect to be able to defend all of a character's choices either, right? Let me compare this to Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
There was one moment in Knights of the Old Republic where playing Darkseid really felt cool. And that's when you use your force power to convince the authoritarian jerk police forces to go after your enemy. All right, they were the fish people. They were very, very militaristic and had unreasonable police standards. And you can, at one point, use your force powers to convince them that your rivals were the ones at fault. And mm-hmm. then they go after them. The rest of the time in video games, it doesn't matter whether it's BioWare, doesn't matter whether it's Obsidian, doesn't matter whether it's anybody. The way they represent being an outlaw, being a renegade, being Darkseid, is just being aggressively petty. And unnecessarily cruel and grimy and pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
They make it seem like you have the option of playing some kind of Bond villain. Imagine if a Bond villain walking down the street pauses to rifle through the pockets of some homeless person by the side of the street because they happen to have some spare change available. Like, that's the vision of evil that video games tend to present.
Yeah.
And it's quite frankly embarrassing. Like, video games for decades have been unable to represent moral nuance. And that's fine. I understand that. But in the context of Red Dead Redemption 2, it's really making me live in there because of the quality of the detail, the level of detail that's going on here, the level of granularity where I'm told with every button press to threaten, extort, or beat some poor homesteader who's desperately poor. It makes it feel all the worse. You're telling me that it builds towards something.
Yeah.
I hope that's true. I don't know how much more rope, no pun intended, I can give Red Dead Redemption 2, because very often the terrible control scheme is collaborating with the awful choices I'm being forced to make in this sandbox that isn't really a sandbox. It's more like I'm being railroaded. Anyway, there's a lot going on. I have very conflicted feelings, clearly.
Clearly. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to recall some of the early game. Because I feel like later on, I mean, as long as you're doing the story, of course, all of that is very railroaded in a lot of ways. Like, it's not a game that has a lot of player choice. But I feel like, I don't know, I really always enjoyed all of the little opportunities to, like, be a good person. You know, you're riding along and you find somebody in trouble and you save them from bandits or whatever. Even though, thinking on it, that doesn't necessarily always mesh with the Arthur Morgan that you see, especially in those early story cutscenes. But I feel that he turns it around.
I agree entirely. Like, you come across some woman whose horse just died and she's been thrown from her horse and you give her a ride back to town for no reason. And that's great. And then the next scene, Arthur Morgan is literally smacking some woman across the face because he's doing some terrible thing for terrible reasons.
Yep.
And we're just told this is just part of the experience. This is what you have to deal with. Or you hear someone panicking because they're being attacked by a puma and you go over to help and you shoot the puma 3 times in the face, but the puma still decapitates you. Okay, fine, whatever. Combat in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
Can't take cover from a puma, and apparently 3 revolver shots at close range ain't enough to put down a puma. Fine.
Yeah.
It's just there's a lot, and there, a lot of it is. I don't like.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time I was riding on my horse trying to kill a puma, which was probably a mistake to begin with. But anyway, I accidentally shot my horse in the head and killed it.
Oh, no.
And then I got thrown off the horse and then got killed by a puma. So, you know.
Sure. Maybe it was exacting revenge for the horse. One thing I will return to is that I've been hearing now for 7 years. Red Dead Redemption 2 came out 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing for 7 years how Red Dead Redemption 2 is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm no longer shocked when I don't enjoy a game that everyone else loves.
Sure.
I've come to terms with that a long time ago. I'm amazed at how nobody talks about how garbage it controls. It's there. It's in the critical coverage. It was part of the discussion after it was first released. But unlike some other shortcomings of major releases, like people complain about weapon durability in Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
People complain about Navi in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
People complain about camera issues in Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. Like, all these games, whether I've played them or not, there are these things that get filtered through popular discussion about these games. And I suppose I shouldn't have been shocked because I kind of had some of the same objections in Grand Theft Auto.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not get it.
Yeah, like, honestly, I didn't remember that the controls were at all bad, which is funny because I started up the game, you know, I'm running around on my horse. I had forgotten that apparently if you want to go full, like, top speed on the horse, you do have to mash A. You can't just hold it in, which, woof.
It's a choice.
It is a choice. I also accidentally punched my horse the first time I tried to get on it, and it kicked me, which I deserved, and ran away.
Legit.
Yeah, a lot of things don't feel intuitive. I think that the reason that I don't have the memory of the Red Dead Redemption 2 controls being bad is eventually I just got used to them. And that's not the best endorsement. But I think I got used to them and that it was no longer a barrier to me enjoying playing.
Let me sketch out not necessarily my ideal game, but definitely a game that I would absolutely adore.
Yeah.
And that would be a game with the game design sensibilities of Skyrim and the attention to detail of a Rockstar game. Because in a game like Skyrim, there are a million different things you can do. And they are not spoon-fed to you over a series of literally dozens and dozens and dozens of mini-tutorials that are parceled out over the story campaign tens of hours into gameplay.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I do remember about the first Red Dead Redemption is how the Deadeye system kept changing even tens of hours into the game. It's like, guys, pick a lane. Decide how the thing works and have it work that way. Like, maybe my character can level up in some sort of pseudo-RPG system, but you're just changing it kind of because you want to change it? Bizarre. Anyway, have the tutorials be optional and or be introduced contextually when the player decides to interact with them.
Yeah.
Don't tell me I need to clean my horse and not let me clean my horse because I haven't done the story mission yet. I mean, give me a break. That's just incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the world of Skyrim doesn't have the same texture that the world of Red Dead Redemption 2 has.
Mm-hmm.
So I want all the UI people from Skyrim, all the game design people from Skyrim, maybe even most of the mission design conceits from Skyrim. And I want the world texture and world design of the people who work on the Rockstar games. Now that is something I would play the crap out of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost trying to imagine, like, how long would that take to make?
Point taken.
It's like, oh yeah, if you go in that little cottage that's 6 miles up this mountain, then yeah, I don't know. But I completely agree that that would be amazing.
Okay, point taken. Maybe it's that logic entirely that leads to the ridiculous crunch and bloated budgets of your modern AAA games. Maybe even thinking that way is absurd. And maybe I should instead be happy with either the indies that are the product of a couple of passionate people with an idea, and or the sort of more circumscribed 6 to 8 hour experiences like Still Wakes the Deep or Hellblade or something like that. But it's just, I feel like, yeah, just the level of hatred I have for Red Dead Redemption 2 is so profound. I can't remember the last time I've hated something so much and yet still kept playing it. It's truly baffling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little baffled, honestly. Like, I'm excited to learn if you do get past, like, kind of Arthur's turning point. But I don't know if you'll ever get there.
The fact that you tell me that it exists means that I might, like, I'll tell you when I stopped. I stopped when the next two story missions, there were two story missions that were available to me, and both of them involved springing members of the gang from bad decisions they'd made.
Ah, yes.
And it's like, I don't care to do any of this. This is just, no. So maybe I'll be inclined to go do this. Maybe I'll feel like going and springing the racist, surly jerk from his current captors. And maybe that'll make me suffer through another sequence of Arthur Morgan drinking too much and beating the crap out of people who don't deserve to be beaten the crap out of. But quality world building and quality graphic design only gets you so far. And I don't know how much longer my hatred and fascination will last.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see. But regardless, you know, I'm glad that you got to experience some of the stuff, at least, that, you know, people love about it so much, and that you appreciate the attention to detail that Rockstar does so well.
It's been interesting, and I'll tell you, if nothing else, Caitlin, this experience has been valuable, because as I've been subjected to endless, breathless media speculation about Grand Theft Auto 6, part of me has been like, oh yeah, maybe I'll, I don't know, maybe that's something I want to, nope.
No.
It's cured me of any curiosity towards that particular media property. So it's been useful in that sense.
All right, that's good. That's good.
All right, so that's been Red Dead Redemption 2. Caitlin, what would you like to shout out for us?
So today, I'm going to shout out, I'm not sure if it's Saros or Saros or what.
That's what I was going to shout out today!
Oh my god!
Lightning round! <Woo! laughs>
It's the next game by Housemarque, that the developer of Returnal, which I never beat because I'm bad at it, but I really loved it anyway.
Returnal is so good.
It's so good. Yeah, so good. And I love Rahul Kohli, who's like starring in Saros.
He's very dreamy.
I mean, I've loved him ever since like iZombie. I've never even seen Midnight Mass, which I know is like, you know, a big role for him. But anyway, yeah.
It's amazing. And he's dreamy in it.
I'm really excited.
Okay, so first of all, you should watch Midnight Mass.
Okay.
Secondly, whatever else anyone will say about me, people may call me a prude. People may call me obsessed with fighting games. People may say that I just don't appreciate good culture. I have beaten Returnal.
Oh, I'm so proud. Clap, clap, clap.
Returnal is so good. It's so good, and I can't wait to see what Housemarque does next.
Yeah.
Now, that was a game where the quality and attention to detail was in the core gameplay loop. All the controls were pitch perfect.
Mm-hmm.
All the weapons felt great. All the enemy design was really good. Anything bad that happened to you, you knew why it happened and you knew it was your fault.
Yep.
And it's just relentlessly difficult, but in the best possible way. Very high skill ceiling. Super fun. Super visually appealing. Wish it had an actual story instead of a whole bunch of just weird stuff being shoveled at you.
There's a lot of weird stuff.
But nothing's perfect, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made it to the second boss. I almost killed the second boss like 4 times, and I bounced for a bit. I I still really want to try again. I actually, the last time I played Returnal with a friend, but that's challenging because I believe you share lives, and if you're both kind of not that good, you run out of them real fast.
Yes, it is. I've never played co-op, but my understanding is that it is in some ways more difficult.
Yeah.
As a lot of co-op designs are. I will say, I'm not going to claim that Returnal was easy. Returnal is very, very hard. But as somebody who loves old school shoot 'em ups and old school bullet hell, and who loves third person shooters, the fact that you have an invincibility dash in a shoot 'em up conceit kind of made me amazed. I'm like, oh, there's this huge wall of bullets coming at me. No problem.
Yeah.
And so it took a long time for me to rewire my intuitions about what was dangerous and what wasn't. And I loved everything about Returnal, again, other than the storytelling. It was so good.
So good.
So that's Saros. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for All My Best Friends Are Digital. That's going to do it for this week. Thank you so much for deciding to spend some time with us. We hope to see you again soon, and please enjoy your digital time, whatever you have of it. And as always, if you like what you hear, please tell a friend, and if you don't like what you hear, tell two enemies. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital. Okay, I'm going to start over.
Okay, that's not, I wouldn't say that that wasn't your strongest intro ever.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting direction, though.
Yeah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.